eLearning Brunch, your podcast for digitalization and learning. Okay, welcome to our eLearning Brunch podcast. This is episode 3, and this is a highly experimental and crazy podcast because today's topic is eLearning Brunch podcast in VR. So for all those people that are joining the podcast today, you'll not only have the opportunity to listen to our podcast, but also you'll be able to get a YouTube link later. And you're going to be able to view this whole thing in virtual reality. So the journey for eLearning Brunch has been an interesting one. We start off with the first episode talking about animation in eLearning. And then we moved on to, gamification in eLearning, the concept of how games influence eLearning. And today we're going to be talking to Christian. And he's our guest for today. Hello, Christian.
Hey, so, Kenneth.
And the topic for today is e-learning, VR in e-learning and all the effects. So we're going to just go at it. So first of all, Chris, tell me about yourself. How did you come about? How did this whole thing, virtual reality and your company, HoloLux, you know, come about? Tell us a little bit of background.
Yeah, for sure. Glad to be here, Kenna. Thanks for the invitation.
Thanks for being here.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, I came pretty early to all this IT stuff. My parents already were self-employed and they had a travel agency and they started to invest rather early in IT. So I grew up between IBM AS400. So, and I was very fascinated as a kid when I saw this Ember sparkling monitors and the blinking promising cursor ready. So the tabula rasa, to create something completely new out of nothing. That's what drives my passion in the IT business. And after I worked around 10 years in the collaboration business where I tried to help people to work better together with technologies like Office 365 and SharePoint. Yeah, and then my next stage is virtual reality. Mm-hmm. Because I strongly believe virtual reality will be the next level of collaboration. Mm-hmm. And I came to virtual reality via Thorsten Hari. He is the founder of Zeitraum. And we also did a lot of co-working. That's how our company started, was in a co-working space. And we had lunch and he told me, hey, virtual reality, that's the next big thing. And in LA, he is in the film business. He do also special effects for Bad Robot. And he told me, oh, everybody in LA is crazy about the next big thing, virtual reality. So I was very skeptical about this. I never tried that before. I think it was 5 or 6 years ago. And he said, hey, I have to try it to understand. And he took me to his office and gave me Oculus DK1, mm-hmm. the first development device. And then I tried it. And afterwards, I was sure. And it was the birth hour of HoloLux, the agency, because I realized that is a game changer.
Okay.
And I think to really get it, you have to try virtual reality really understand what it is.
Okay, so now for most people, maybe you could give a little explanation on what's the difference between virtual reality, augmented reality, just a little background, and then there's also the other topic that sometimes is also referred to as mixed reality. Could you give us a little idea or an explanation of what the difference is?
For sure. It's a little bit difficult in this business with regards terms. There are two major terms, I would say. It's augmented reality. That means you have the reality plus 3D things. You can place 3D objects into your reality. I think the most famous device is the HoloLens in this area. Mm-hmm. And then you have, on the other hand, you have virtual reality. That's where we are currently. You only have virtual reality. You don't see the reality. You're completely immersed in a virtual reality space like we are now. Mm-hmm. And then because the term augmented reality was a little damaged because Google had one of the first projects there. It was the Google Glasses. And mm-hmm. there it was it was not a big success, the first wave of Google Glasses. And so Microsoft coined a new word, mixed reality, because they say it's not only you blend over into the reality, Google Glasses just could augment the reality, but with HoloLens, you were able to interact even with the reality. So it was more interactive, and so they called that mixed reality. But it got then more complicated, and as the Microsoft marketing decided that they also bring out a virtual reality device, and they call that all the Microsoft mixed reality platform. And so when Microsoft talks about mixed reality, it's one platform, and it's also, it's from the Microsoft perspective, it's everything from augmented reality to virtual reality. Because in a long-term strategy for Microsoft, they believe it will merge together. So you can switch between mixed reality or augmented reality and virtual reality. Okay. And yeah, and then there's even one more term that you hear more and more is cross-reality. It's
I haven't heard of that one.
Yeah, cross-reality or XR. It's mainly coming from the web development perspective, because they can also do augmented reality, they can also do virtual reality, and it also means a term for both of the things. So these are the terms that you usually hear about. Technically, it's the easiest way. You say augmented reality for everything that is you overblend the reality and virtual reality for the other things. I think that's more clear what we are talking about.
Okay, so in layman's terms, then for us here, this here is purely virtual reality?
That's pure virtual reality.
Okay, pure virtual reality. And then the augmented reality, or mixed, as you would say, was always when you then have an overlay of a virtual environment on a real environment, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
And to make it even a little more complicated, the first version of HoloSpaces was hybrid reality. So we could be here in virtual reality, but when you had a HoloLens, you saw you saw the avatar here, and the real people saw themselves real, and saw in their reality us as avatar. So there is also even a mixture between that, where you can join augmented reality with virtual reality. I call it hybrid reality. So, there are a lot of terms.
Okay. Well, at least this is just the basic understanding for all our listeners. So now everybody knows what the difference is, and so forth and so on. So, of course, this podcast is basically about e-learning. So somewhere we're going to come over and find out how this affects learning and e-learning in particular. But before I get to that, what I'd like to get at is, why do you consider VR to be such a powerful tool? We talked about this earlier, and you had a couple insights on that. What makes VR for you such a powerful tool? You, I think, coined it to say that it was the next level of communication. So this is going to tie in with e-learning, of course, but how did you explain that a little bit?
Yeah. So, as I said, I worked already a lot in the collaboration area, and I learned at this time a lot also about the background, why communication and virtual reality is so important. And when you look into human history, we see what makes us so successful as humans. That's not because we can kill with our hands a tiger. That's because we work together. That's because we collaborate. We couldn't kill a single person, could not kill a mammoth, but we could do it when we work together. And so when you look into human history, you will see that communication technology was the foundation of, was always the harbinger of the next area. That was always collaboration technology. And every level we reached there brought us a massive technology advance in everything of that. So, and virtual reality, what is the interesting thing about virtual reality is there was a study that I thought it's pretty interesting. It was already in 2001 in Stanford. And they had a study about neutral gaze and personal distance in virtual reality. Even in 2001, they had room scale virtual reality. That means room scale virtual reality is a new term. So you can also move in virtual reality. That means room scale. And they already had that, and they built an experiment, and they took the people inside, and they had no idea what's about. So they put in a basic object. By the way, we can also put in basic object, like, let's say they put in a cube. So you see,
also, oh my God. Okay, so we're on a podcast here, so you can't see this until you click on the video link. But
I put a cube
here into the room and is displaying it on our desk here.
So exactly.
Amazing. Okay.
So they brought in a basic geometry, like this cube that I put now on our desktop. So I see I'm a little bit in the way of the camera. So they put in a cube, and the people had no idea. They just watched what they are doing, and they, in this case, they go very close to the cube. They touch that, they go into inside. They weren't afraid at all. Then, without that people know what happened, they put in a human avatar that looks like a human, like, let's say, a little bit like we look now. And what they found out is the people acted completely different. They keep something we call personal distance. They had no idea what it's about, but they keep this distance. And they didn't go behind them, and they acted completely different, in a completely different way than they would interact with this cube. And so they proved that for our, let's call it the reptile brain, that it can really trigger our instincts. They didn't do it on purpose. They didn't know what I was looking for in the experiment. So they just did it without knowing it. And so that shows it is an instinct that we keep personal distance.
Okay.
And so you see that if this effect you will not have with a classical meeting, with a Skype meeting, with a Teams meeting, with a Zoom meeting. You will not have this effect. And so that was the proof that virtual reality is the first communication technology that goes even off the level of our instincts. So for the brain, it's kind of real. It triggers the same instincts like when we would meet in reality. And this is especially Corona is maybe one of the
it's a test case, because I mean this is where like I said, I've gone through the three podcasts now. In the first one, we talked about animation and how animation and animated characters affect how you view your environment. So there's a certain amount of you can distance yourself from the materials that you learn. And in the second part, we then talked about gamification, how that is an intrinsic thing that we learn by gaming. And now here in virtual reality, we're combining all those components to make one. Each one of these, like I would say, is like cogs in a wheel, and you know, goes one into the other. And I guess Corona now, with the with having to distance, with having to look for other opportunities, how to communicate and how we set up meetings, is a platform for testing this. So, I mean, we've all been in the various Zoom meetings or team meetings, and they're different. And this here is a very different environment, because I see facial cues, I see hand movements, and there's a very interesting focus. I mean, you'll see it later if you look, if you go onto the YouTube, you'll be able to see it. So, amazing. Okay.
Yeah, you're right. Somehow you said the first two podcasts you did was about animation and one of gamification. And we are now kind of part of a game. So this is, I think, virtual reality is even kind of gamification pure because, so I think it's even a combination of these two things. And yeah, and in Corona, I checked that there were recently a lot of studies popped up about human psyche and all being isolated at home, and there's a lot of they coined the term Zoom fatigue, which means psychological effect of being isolated like this. And interestingly, virtual reality brings social presence, that's the difference, brings social presence in time of social distancing. And we have, for example, we do, and I really enjoy that, we do our daily Scrum meetings. We have every day a 10-minute, 15-minute stand-up meeting in virtual reality because we are completely distributed team. And I think, yeah, it's a much better feeling than just having this this Zoom meeting. And you cannot do anything else because when you now put your glasses to, when you don't watch or don't focus me, your head will just lying, I don't know, on the table. So I will also see if you... if you look at me, or you cannot just, you know, read something else, answer some emails, that's here not possible.
Yeah, but the interesting thing on the Zoom meetings though that I heard was that you said there was Zoom fatigue, but for certain people, there are certain people with I think attention deficit disorders, and for those, for example, it's these Zoom meetings are easier because they know exactly who's talking and when. Now, this here is a different type of atmosphere. I'm wondering how, if you have a larger group of people, how well that works. Because here I have direction, I'm moving, I'm seeing. And once again, I have to focus on the speaker because I'm not in the Zoom meeting, at least. Mm-hmm. I know exactly who's speaking because it's indicated on the meeting. But how do you feel? I haven't been in one of these larger meetings. How is it in a stand-up meeting here? How does that work? Is it very natural? Or for me, it's still a little bit, hard to orient myself. I mean, it's a very interesting thing, but the tools are new for me.
Yeah, sure. You tried it for the first time. So we try it a lot. We also had some meetings with Frank Tassone from iVision about PMI project management from PMI, and we were a larger group of 8 to 10. I'm not sure it was. I think we have 8 speakers, and it doesn't matter. But they really they feel quite comfortable after a while. So it. Mm-hmm. It seems it's rather intuitive for the people to use it in virtual reality after they use it the first time.
Okay.
And an effect that people will not see in the video and will not realize on the podcast is we also have spatial audio. It's also very important for the immersion feeling. That means you stand on the right side to me. I hear you in virtual reality. You're talking to my right ear. And when you have more distance... Okay. I will hear you more far away. It means when you stand on the backside on our stage, I would not hear you anymore. So it's the same perception that you have in a real meeting. You have the spatial listening, and that works in virtual reality too. You need that because if not, you would not. It would be more difficult to see if the person on the right side is talking or the person on the left side is talking.
Okay, interesting. Well, that bodes well. There will be a lot of interesting concepts that can come out of this for, like I said, e-learning. That's our specialty, IMC specialty, and we've already done one or two pilot projects with companies such as Zeiss and Lamborghini, and there we used more. The idea was to use augmented reality so that people can basically remotely touch and feel and operate an object. Now, Chris, have you had any experience in providing virtual reality in a learning environment, or do you have any reference as to where you see that this might develop to?
Yeah.
Or can?
Sure. I work very close with Microsoft. So officially, I'm a Microsoft HoloLens MVP. That my MVP program is an award from Microsoft that you have to win once a year. The advantage is you can work directly with a product group at Microsoft. Mm-hmm. And Microsoft have the HoloLens, which I think is the most famous and best device for mixed reality.
No product placement here.
And they, for sure, they brought out the products that customers wanted have the most. And one is remote assist. That's where you can give people advice in a Teams meeting, and the others see it on HoloLens, directly standing at the machine and showing how you can fix it. You even can paint on the machine. And then another case they brought out is guidance. And this is an application where people can, similar like Microsoft did with PowerPoint, they can go to a real machine and they can record a learning on it. So you can place arrows and text messages on the machine and a little bit like you would build a PowerPoint, and then people can click through it and even can practice at the real machine.
Okay. That's similar what our pilot project was for Zeiss. Is basically they had a machine that people had to operate. So they were able to display the machine and then in virtual reality then basically manipulate the machine, which was very interesting. So possibly, you know, that could be one of the future scenarios for integrating virtual reality learning into an overall e-learning platform.
Not virtual reality cannons.
Oh, augmented. Sorry. My... okay.
You can see it.
Here. I don't know if you'll see this later in the if you look at the ring, I'm putting my hands over my face, so I'm trying to show shame, something that you will then probably see in the YouTube thing. Yeah. Okay, augmented reality. My bad. Okay, what other applications do you see in reference to learning? Or where do you see the trend? Do you think that now with Corona and, you know, people doing more home office and so forth, do you see this topic gaining a lot more momentum? And has there been a lot more increased interest in this topic?
Yeah, indeed, we had a lot of requests about the software. Recently about Holospaces, we are now in Holospaces, and we got a lot more requests. But I think even a little bit before Corona, I was very interested. There's another topic that that's also helps to fasten up things for virtual reality, and that's environment. Because the United Nations, they had a request for information where they were looking for their meetings, for their for the UN meetings for virtual reality. They asked for how can we do real time translation and things like that, because they say, hey, we don't want to pollute the world through all our meetings flying around. We also consider to may meet in virtual reality. Mm-hmm. So there are two factors that really play for virtual reality and for this technology, and that's the environment, protecting the environment, and things like Corona. Mm-hmm. These are two drivers for this technology.
Okay, and is it now? Do you see that? Do you assume or do you see like a mass availability of this technology? Is that something, is it still a technology that is a border technology, or do you see it as now, like I said, gaining more momentum and more interest and more applications?
Yeah, it's still not really on, it's still not really on the mainstream market. A lot of customers, we, beside Holospaces, we also do consulting for customers and do projects in this area. And what we see is many people, many customers, larger customers, they did all projects and prototypes, but and also a lot of marketing stuff. But I don't see any broader usage of it in reality.
Okay. Okay, so we'll see where. So, who do you see as being the main drivers? What industries do you see as being the main drivers for this, for a movement? Is it a company like ours, an e-learning company that does, you know, web-based training and that does e-learning as such, or do you see other markets, or is there any trend who seems to be pushing the market the most?
Yeah, I think indeed learning and e-learning will be really massively changed from these new technologies in the next years. There are scenarios that work much better in virtual reality than in reality or in 2D or things like this. especially when you're working with 3D objects. I say there are different cases where virtual reality will help more and or less is when you want to do a training for accounting, and you just it's just 2D stuff, then it's not a super huge advantage doing this in virtual reality. But when you do something in medicine and you can even practice a surgery in virtual reality, that's amazing and much, much better than you see it in 2D in theory. It's a really big difference because we also learned it's real for the brain. So you have rather even the, maybe you even feel afraid when you do the surgery that the patient die. It's really a difference. And then other things like engineering, when you work with 3D models, they get a really feeling about the volume of something. And it's especially everything where you work with 3D models. It's definitely pretty much interesting for virtual reality. Okay. But one thing what people may not see immediately is it's also interesting for normal workshops. We are now in our stage room, but we can have a workshop too with sticky notes and with
with
PowerPoints. And you can even have a training here and you can build, you can say you make one working group that, okay, they solve this task, the other one solve this task. They go in virtual reality in a different room, their work room, and prepare the task. And later on, they come to the stage or present what they did. So you can even do some of these things where people can go virtually into a room and prepare something in a group work.
Okay.
And it feels much better than in a classic meeting.
Okay. So, but for most people, I think virtual reality is still a little bit like very future-like technology. So let's talk about the technology itself. How much does a company need to invest, or how much does a company need to invest to make something like this happen? What scale are we talking about? Do you need to have how many lenses do you need to have? What type of technical setup? I mean, is it something that you need to have a whole IT department to set up? Is it something that maybe like I said, now everybody's moved to the home office, so it's not a problem getting people, you know, onto Zoom or Teams. That's not a big issue. But, you know, we're talking here, I'm wearing a mask right now. I got two joysticks and stuff, and it takes a little bit to set up. So how do you see that?
I think hardware is maybe, is the largest challenge, in this area. It's also pretty much fast evolving. And you wear now, for example, I think that's a very nice device even for customers, is the Oculus Quest. It's completely mobile, a standalone computer. And you just need, you don't need a computer setup or anything complicated. With the first wave of virtual reality, you needed a game computer. And I don't know, the cost for setting that up is between 2 to 4,000 euro, depending.
Wow. Okay.
And that's not what enterprises buy for the employees. And this one that we wear now here, the Oculus Quest, is around 500 bucks.
Okay.
I think that's affordable and it's already a good device.
Okay.
So I think, next year there will be a next generation of this. I think that will be even then more awesome. But even when customers, they are more challenged than even the hardware, then when they buy the hardware, then completely new challenges will come, like data protection and is this device secure enough to bring in our wireless? So you see also the classic, all the IT-related governance stuff will also come into play in virtual reality. And most the vendors currently are not too well prepared for the challenges against data protection, IT security, because that's for a company also required.
Let me ask you this. Do you offer that? Is that part of your service? Do you offer that? I mean, in what you do, do you just develop these rooms and stuff like that? Or do you help companies implement, if they want to implement a virtual reality setting and the whole stuff with it? Do you also do that?
We do both, and we did, for example, with Beiersdorf. You may know Beiersdorf from brands like Nivea. We already did some experiments with them, with meetings in virtual reality. So yeah, we do prototypes with customers in virtual reality.
Okay, so the scaling would be right now that mostly large companies, I mean, from our experience, it's been, you know, like I said, Zeiss and Lamborghini are two pilot projects that we worked on in augmented and virtual reality. So it's larger customers. But one of the other stages that we're going to see is probably the education industry. So in this case, schools. Schools are also moving towards getting, you know, the children cannot go to school due to Corona. So maybe this is something that, although I would say that's on the expensive side, if you say it's 500, do you see any application in school environments?
Yeah, I'm not sure if I see applications, especially for school in this. No, I cannot remember who saw something like this. You must see there's also one very, very special thing where reality kicks back, and that's, for example, simple things like battery lifetime or how long you feel comfortable with this glasses. It's with the resolution. And so what we find out in a lot of meetings is usually you should not do it much longer than 30 minutes to 1 hour.
Ah, okay. That's interesting.
With the Quest, it's already better. It depends on how good your body is tracked. You feel more comfortable as better the body tracking is. But the resolution should also be a little bit improved. And most of the people, up to 1 hour in the Oculus Quest, they feel comfortable. But then you some when it's then too heavy and you don't like it anymore to wear the glasses. So that's also something you have to consider. Because they're aware when you show it to people in the education area, then they also dream about, okay, we do a whole day workshop in this. But I think that would work. Yeah, theoretically that would work, but practically you rather should go for half an hour. And you have also one additional problem that some people don't get along with this. They get nausea, how it's called, seasick.
Nausea. They get nauseous, so to say. They get sick.
Yeah, okay. They get this sickness. It's some people are sensitive to that. So that's also a challenge when you want to move. You cannot do things in a school or something like this where some person doesn't feel comfortable in. Then you mean you have to drop it completely.
Okay. Interesting. Okay, so I think we've pretty much covered, I think, all the aspects. So I would say right now, from my personal feeling, from what you've explained, we're still very much on the cusp of this technology, and it's very much still a future technology with more and more applications being invented and realized and actually implemented now. One of the main things that I would see, the biggest application would be, of course, I would say in augmented reality and linking that up to the e-learning, which we do. I would say it's when you have you made the example with the doctors and so forth, so that you can remotely access, touch, and work with objects from a distance. So, that's where I personally would see the most effect. If it can be used in larger classroom meetings, I don't know. Remains to be seen, especially since you mentioned that there's also a fatigue factor, like 30 minutes or up to an hour. So I'm really excited because I find this to be a very, very interesting experience. And as you mentioned, as now I'm looking between you and the camera, I'm starting to get feel more comfortable with how this works. So I guess it's a matter of frequency of use will probably be a factor in it. And see how that develops. So now we come to the last segment of our podcast.
Maybe one small addition to this is what is also beside the technology and something like battery lifetime and resolution. There's also one other thing is it is rather expensive to produce special 3D content. It's more complicated than to build something in 2D. You see, even many people struggle to build a 2D PowerPoint. Now you give them 3D. It's challenging and it's rather expensive. So I think especially in the learning industry, it must be like there are good tools like PowerPoint where people can build maybe in virtual reality the case and then they save it and make it, you know, like editors, like designers for in virtual reality to build these trainings. Because when you always go to the agency to produce this, it's rather expensive.
Okay.
So I think there are also some good builder apps missing that make it more affordable. That could even be really one of the larger challenges, that it's too expensive to produce the content.
Ah, interesting. Okay, I didn't think about that aspect. I have to refer to my colleagues on that, but you have a good point because, like you said, it's harder to generate the 3D content, more expensive. So that's why probably the focus would be then, you know, high-end things or high-end companies, highly technologized, highly technological. Good that you can't see my lips move because right now I had them all screwed up in different forms. Okay, cool. So thank you very much, Chris, for that. Thank you for the trip and all the experiences here in the virtual and augmented reality world. And now we get to the part that's always the interesting part. Well, not that the rest was not interesting, but we get to the brunch part. So we had talked about this. If you had brunch or something that you could fix a recipe, what would it be?
Dun, dun, dun. So say again what you mean exactly.
Okay, so the topic was e-learning brunch, and I always say, do you have a go-to recipe? Like, okay, first question actually, do you cook, Chris?
Sometimes, yeah.
Sometimes, okay. my first guest basically reduced his cooking to making fish sticks and mashed potatoes. I think I had an upgrade in the second one. So now the question is, where do you fall along that category of fixing meals? Do you fall in the preparing or actually the whole thing?
Yeah, rather than the whole thing.
The whole thing. Okay, so what is your go-to recipe?
Yeah, personally, I really like to cook spaghetti. That's because a lot of my friends are Italian. And so, and then as a teenager, I was there and I really learned how to make great spaghetti.
Okay. Okay. So which kind? Are we talking bolognese, carbonara, or just...
Not that often carbonara. Rather, yeah, some, with different stuff. It's pretty easy to combine it with different things. Most of the time with a tomato sauce, but sometimes with a pesto. But okay. I think I rather like to use fresh stuff in it to give a much better taste. And I'm completely crazy after how hard the noodles are cooked. Al dente, I'm not sure how it's called in English. I'm completely crazy about this.
So you make it a case to make sure that everything is on the point, so to say. Fantastic. Okay, so Chris, thank you very much for letting me partake in this real awesome journey. Time for our last slide. Yeah, yeah, cool. That's the other thing that we have. This is completely amazing. I mean, when you see this later in the broadcast, then you'll be amazed when you take a look at this. Where'd the camera go?
Wasn't the camera guy here? Just like
he's showing the screen. Okay. Amazing. So thank you very much for your insight on what this whole topic, virtual reality, augmented reality is, what the journey will be to the future. So I think we touched on a couple points there. So I'm excited to see what this brings and excited to see what you and your company continue to develop. Maybe, you know, we'll have some crossovers to our company, work together in some type of future collaboration, since you said collaboration was one of the biggest things for you. Yeah. And so thank you very much. And if you like the show, then as usual, smash the like button. If you have any comments, leave it in your comments section. We'll also, like I said, have a link to Christian's company if you want to get in touch with Christian on any of the topics that you might want to expand upon. And of course, we'll have a link to the YouTube so you can see this whole presentation, this whole podcast in actual virtual reality take place. And for anybody wanting to listen to the next one, the next podcast will be on November 10th. So thank you very much.
Yeah. Bernard, and now we can do something really crazy. We can give a high five here with our heads.
Let's see if that works. Is that working? Cameraman.
Sure.
Yeah, cool. Okay, so we did a high five at the end. Thank you very much. That was eLearning Podcast, Empower Yourself to Learn. Talk to you later. Bye.
Bye.